First of all, if you're going to cite news sources, pick good ones. That's where I would start. Credible, really, maybe.
Welcome back, everybody, once again to Wrestling with the Truth, your semi-regular, semi-weekly, maybe bi-weekly, maybe bi-monthly, I don't know, something. It happens from time to time, but I'm here again, and I'm here to talk a couple of different items. We're going to talk the WWE draft. Was it so bad? Was it good? Should it be fixed? How are we going to fix it? As well as just some items going on in the news of wrestling world, because there is certainly a lot going on in the wrestling world, both good and bad right now. And going to talk some hockey as well. And so I'm sorry, you wrestling fans, if you're not into hockey, too bad. We're going to talk that because I have a special guest with me this week. It's Steve McCachran from the Bruins Fastcast, which is a regular listener of mine over on Spotify, and he should become a regular listener of yours as well, because if you ain't got 6 to 8 minutes a week to listen to a podcast, there's something wrong in your world. But anyway, Steve, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, talk about your podcast, talk about yourself, and let the fans know what you're all about, and thanks for joining me. So, Steve, welcome.
Well, thanks, BC. Thanks for having me. I'm always glad to come on here and talk wrestling, and I love hockey too, as we know. I'm a big Bruins fan. My podcast is the Bruins Fastcast. It's available on Spotify. It used to be on Google Podcasts, but apparently that's not around anymore. So yeah. It's somewhere. It's on Spotify for sure. I do it weekly, and I have been trying to get it over 10 minutes now, just to, you know, they say algorithms and logarithms, right, and whatever they're called. And so I've just been trying to do a little bit longer lately, but definitely love to talk Bruins, and I like to just recap, and you know, it's a passion of mine. I've been a fan for 37 years now, I believe. So just, yeah. I'm a big fan, and I just love hockey, and I love talking Bruins.
It's, you're a 8 minutes of genius and 2 minutes of shucking and jiving now. Is that what
that's
it is?
Pretty much it. Pretty much it. You're right.
And I got to, for all you folks that aren't hockey fans and don't know what the heck's going on in the world of the NHL, but I was very nervous because I invited Steve onto this podcast when his Bruins were up 3-1 in the series against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm like, he's beautiful. They'll be in the second round. He'll be relaxed. He'll be able to talk about what's going on. And then all of a sudden, the Leafs came back in that series, tied it up 3-3, and they went to overtime last night in Game 7. And I was panicking because I thought I was going to have to hold
intervention.
Intervention, yes, for Steve's for Steve over his Bruins, but they pulled it out at the last minute. So a happy guy today, but geez, what'd you think of that game last night? Were you chewing nails? What was going on?
Absolutely. I mean, I was just like, I was barely reacting. My wife can tell you, I'm just sitting there like, oh my God, please, please. And every time there'd be something in the net, I would just like tense up, and, you know, and it was just, you know, to have three games go 2-1, you know, in a row, it's just like nerve wracking. And then two of them went to overtime. I mean, you know, but I mean, I don't know what it is. The Bruins seem to have some kind of a spell, or I don't know what it is, or a magic potion over the Leafs, and they just seem to beat them every time. It's like four in a row now that went to Game 7. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was very, very happy at the end. Let's just say that.
I was watching Game 6, and although they didn't do too well in the first couple of periods, in that third period, the Bruins were all over the Leafs, but they couldn't win a faceoff for the life of themselves. If they hadn't won one faceoff, they might have tied that game up, but it was
for
just
sure.
Unbelievable to watch, but they were all over them for most of that period. But then, yeah, it all comes down to that. But I think Matthews is the key to that whole series, would you say?
Yeah, for sure. I'm not sure, like, the Leafs were pretty sneaky about injuries and what was wrong with people the whole time. We didn't really know what was wrong with Nylander, and then we didn't really know what was wrong with Matthews, and then even the goalie disappeared for the last game. So you know, it's funny. I don't know. Like, when the Bruins have an injury, we tend to like tell exactly what it is and how long they'll be out, but you never know that with the Leafs. So I don't know. But, you know, like I said, I mean, it was a great series one way or the other. And I mean, even without their best goalie in last night, the Leafs could have won it. But, you know, it just came down to, you know, last shot wins, and the Bruins managed to get that shot.
Yeah. And as every Canadian who's a non-Leafs fan, we're very happy to see their consecutive streak of not making it to the Stanley Cup Finals continues. So we are all reveling in this at the moment, but for your Leafs fans, sorry. Sucks. Hey, I'm a Bills fan. We lost four Super Bowls.
Yeah, they got nothing on that. They got nothing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's get into the wrestling talk here. Oh, actually, sorry. One more thing before we get into the wrestling talk. Obviously, Bob Cole just passed away. What'd you think about that? I mean, Bob Cole, the voice of every Canadian youngster that grew up watching Hockey Night in Canada back in the 80s and even through the 90s. I know in the later years, I mean, obviously, but what were your thoughts on Bob Cole passing away?
Yeah, you know, I mean, who didn't grow up with Bob Cole on Saturday nights calling Hockey Night in Canada? I mean, he's, like you said, he's the voice of generations, like, what, 40, 50 years he did that. And, you know, just to lose a guy like that. I mean, you know, and in the last few years when he was calling, you know, people said, oh, he's behind the play and stuff like that. But even then, you know, he still was very iconic. It was just that voice that you heard and you knew that was Hockey Night in Canada. And that was, you know, the voice of hockey. And he definitely will be missed. I mean, they're going to have a hard time, you know, someone to fill that shoes. That's just practically, you know, impossible. So, you know, but definitely one of the greatest, you know, announcers of all hockey ever, you know, I mean, like in the world. And, you know, better like Doc Emrick and some of those guys, he was just, you know, very iconic and definitely a big loss for the hockey world.
It's and to put it in a wrestling perspective, I guess, how Jim Ross was the voice of a lot of childhoods, I would compare Bob Cole to like Gordon Solie. Just a very distinct voice in a distinct way that he did a broadcast, but it made everything so memorable just to hear an "Oh baby" from Bob Cole or something like that, right? Or you know, it just some of the memorable the memorable calls, the way he said Joe Sakic's name in the Olympics that time, you know, it everybody can at least, I'd say, just like, you know, everybody will go up to Jim Ross and like, you know, as God is my witness, he's been broken in half. I'm sure somebody will come up with a Bob Cole-ism. So rest in peace, Bob Cole, because that's a lot of positive memories for hockey fans.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely. Sure.
Canada trying to hang on and get a break. It's going to be a break. It is Joe Sakic scores. Joe Sakic scores. And that makes it 5-2 Canada. Surely that's going
to
be
it. Here's Lemieux. His center penalty coming up. Look at Lemieux.
Okay, let's transfer over to wrestling, because Steve's a man of many colors here. He's not just a hockey fan, but a huge wrestling fan as well. Steve, like, how long have you been a fan of professional? And I know you've been on this podcast many moons ago, and we had a conversation, but let's refresh people. So how long have you been following wrestling for?
Well, I mean, TV wrestling, probably maybe like 83, 84 I started. But definitely, I'd say probably like when I was about 6 or 7 years old, back in the late 70s, I started to go to Grand Prix Wrestling in Truro. And it's funny because I was listening to a podcast where it was Dr. D. David Schultz, and he was talking about, I know, how he had wrestled in the Maritimes. And I was just like, oh my God, I remember that. I was just a kid. Yeah. I remember that guy, how crazy he was. And that was like 1980 or 81. So, but yeah, so it started with Grand Prix Wrestling. And then, you know, once we got cable in the house, or we had friends that had cable, you'd go over Saturday mornings and watch the superstars, watch the big guys beat up the jabronis, and, you know, and then, you know, obviously Monday Night Raw came along after that. But definitely it's got to be over 40 years at this point that I've been a fan, for sure.
We're pretty much identical in our stories, really. I grew up born in 75, so early 80s, my grandmother was a big wrestling fan. We used to sit and watch Grand Prix Wrestling, Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling on TV. I never did get to an actual live Atlantic wrestling because my dad wasn't a big fan or anything like that. But I'd always said if my grandmother had lived, I'd be taking her to the wrestling shows, you know, just so she could go see, because she was a massive wrestling fan.
Well, we were lucky to have, you know, like basically during the summer, one a week in Truro. So, I mean, you know, it was just the thing. You had to beg your dad to take you, and you get the French fries and get all set for the matches, and Krupp and Malumba and all those guys, Leo Burke, Cuban Assassin, all those guys. It was just, you know, it was the same guys every summer, but it was just great to see them, you know, go at it. And it was great entertainment for sure.
It was such a unique thing because they would do a summer tour, and that was that's when they made their hay. And then they shut down during the winter, and you know, guys would go wrestle other places. Like if you now go on Peacock and you watch some of the old NWA, the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, stuff like that, you will see Leo Burke wrestling as Tommy Martin down in as a job guy, I'd say, for the most part, but a very respected one. Even on the shows, they talk about his credentials and stuff like that. But and then, of course, Oaten Stampede, he was doing wrestling. So that was, for me, it was originally I was watching the Atlantic Grand Prix, and then we got TSN, and I remember watching some AWA and watching some Stampede wrestling. I was like, wow, this is pretty cool stuff here. And then I just happened to watch Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling one morning, and afterwards came on WWF, and I was hooked for life. So that's good. So we've got some old school old heads here. So sorry, that's folks. Right. I'm sure you're not going to like our opinions on some things. But before we go into the draft, because we both have some thoughts on the WWE draft that just took place, I want to do a little speed round just on some wrestling news. And boy, wrestling news is definitely in the psyche right now, and how wrestling news is reported, as Triple H ruffled a few feathers last night on the Backlash press conference. And old Sean Ross Sapp seems to be up in arms and pretty upset, ready to send a plane ticket to Triple H for him to meet somewhere and fight over his comments about Fightful and Wrestling Observer and all those guys. But wrestling news reporter. I've decided that WWTT is going to become a true wrestling journalism site as well. I'm going to report all kinds of wrestling news as well. I started it last night with a breaking story about Raw this week is going to be held in Hartford, and they're planning on having matches and in-ring promos and interviews backstage. So just, you heard it here first. My sources are pretty reliable for that. But first thing we want to touch on, do you watch AEW at all? I know you're not a fan, but
I do. As I might have said before, the last time I was on, I'm kind of like a fast forward watcher. If it's I don't know if I like these guys, but I always like to see what happens in the promos and stuff for sure. Yeah. But definitely watch it every week in some capacity.
I've stopped watching. I refuse to put myself through that. I just don't have enough time during the weeks to do so. But
I understand. What'd
you think of old Tony Khan and his recent meltdown on national television on the NFL draft and referring to the WWE as the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling?
I mean, that's pretty harsh. I mean, they got rid of the guy who was supposed to be the Harvey Weinstein. So, I mean, at this point, they've taken action against what was supposed to happen. But he who shall not be named on WWE television is gone. And I think that, it's just more of a, why doesn't he just concentrate on his own product and stop trying to mention WWE all the time? And, even when they showed the video with Punk in it a couple of weeks ago, it's just like, come on guys, let your own product stand out and, try to draw some more fans into the arena for God's sake, it's getting silly. I mean, WWE rarely will ever make a mention of AEW directly. And even when they do, it's kind of just a jab at Cody or something like that. And it's just if they think it's going to do something, fine, but it's probably not. It's just, I just don't like when they're shooting across the bow, as they say, just seems like a cheap shot.
Now, a lot of people will try to defend it and say, well, back in the 90s, we had the Monday Night War and we had Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon to fights on TV and all this jazz, and they were given the results of shows and stuff like that. But there was one critical component to that whole thing as far as that war. Both shows were on the same night. And so they were technically in a war competing for viewers. And at that time, you had about 12 million viewers that were flipping back and forth to each show watching it. Neither of these shows are on the same night. So how do we even have a war in this situation?
Not ratings wise, especially. Oh my God. They it's been pretty rare when they got a million. And then they're coming out talking like they're, up there with WWE. So, I mean, maybe when they start, if their ratings start jumping, which I don't know how they've tried every trick in the book to do it. So I don't know. It's just, like you said, it's not much of a war if one team is dominating pretty much every week, even with their lower shows.
Do you think if Tony Khan was a step away from the booking that this ship could be righted?
Absolutely. There's guys in there that you could have a guy like Christopher Daniels come in and just do all the stuff behind the scenes. You have that fella from Japan there, he's with the Elite. What's his name? Rocky Romero. I mean, that guy does New Japan. You got New Japan guys in there. He would know what they would, work well with. So I just think that he probably shouldn't be so hands-on with it. I mean, it's just one of those things where he thinks he knows wrestling because he's a huge fan of it and he's a big mark, as we know, and he thinks that he knows exactly what would work, and he's not always right. He's been right maybe like 10% of the time, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. It's bad. Yeah, it's really bad at this point. Some of the stuff that's going on that did nothing to help them out, and nobody's even mentioned the slyness of WWE. So he makes that comment during the NFL draft, and really, you can tell the two guys are interviewing him are like, oh my god, I can't believe you just said that. Let's get this guy off the air. Meanwhile, the next night on Monday Night Raw, the WWE shows up with Patrick Mahomes, or Mahomes as Dave Meltzer likes to call him, but he shows up with the Super Bowl winning quarterback, consecutive Super Bowl wins, puts him in an angle, and completely just shows like, you know what, try as you might to top us, we can just pull anything out of our bag of tricks, and we're going to do it. But yeah, unreal. Going over to the WWE, I mean, obviously the Vince McMahon news, we don't want to rehash that. It's just gross and disgusting what we're hearing about. But as you mentioned, he's gone right now. And so really, you're swinging up at something that isn't even there as far as the comment that was made. But what's your thoughts so far on the, I hate calling it the Triple H era. I don't think you should ever name an era after one person. And plus, usually eras get named after the fact, but this is the modern fan anyways. They have to have something historic, so they're going to name it now, but it'll get named after the fact. What's your thoughts on WWE under the helm of Triple H?
I think it's been just great. It's been way more watchable. There's a lot of fellas that wouldn't, and girls too, that wouldn't get a chance normally under the old Vince regime that have come up and really shot to the top. Even like Ricochet lately, they've been, Vince, I don't know if he was super high on him, but now he's getting little shots here and there. Like even LA Knight, I don't think with Vince he had any backing at all, and he's basically one of the most popular guys in the company. A lot of the tag teams like DIY, they got a lot of exposure, and Vince I don't think was huge on them at all. Vince to me never really seemed to be high on anyone from NXT unless they were like a big monster guy. So it's definitely, I think it's much improved. I think it's even the production value, some of those videos, the one where they went back to Sammy through the, through the back of the curtain, and then he came out, to the thing, that was really good. And just, they're doing a lot more little tricks in the background where you'll see someone, getting interviewed by Caleb Braxton or one of them, and then in the background there's a little conversation going on.
Yes.
I wonder what that's going on about,
Easter eggs, as they call them.
Exactly. Yeah. And mm-hmm. Even now, obviously with the they're putting those little barcodes on the screen again too, which I always like. Yeah. And that seemed to be a Triple H thing too. So just production wise, wrestler wise, and even to have the authority figures back. That's awesome. I love that. So definitely I'd say definitely has improved since Vince left, for sure.
Yeah, and it's funny, I was watching Backlash yesterday, and there was, during that first match, with the tag match with Solo and Tama and against the Orton and Owens, where they both split off, they were showing the split screen of the fights and stuff like that, and the camera was flashing back and forth to each one. It brought me back to the Kevin Dunn era, when you'd see so many different camera cuts, and it was really tough to watch that brief moment. Then they did the split screen and it got better, but it reminded me of that and how much I appreciate the fact that that's no longer the case. It's just 100 times better. And it's just very simple things, just extended shots, moving the camera. As you say, doing little Easter eggs in the background. There's nothing, nothing high level going on. It's more so making it a more pleasurable experience for the fan.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Are you excited for the Uncle Howdy stuff?
Oh yeah. I'm definitely excited. I mean, Braun's already back on TV, which I thought was weird. I thought maybe they'd wait until he'd come, but he probably definitely has to be involved. Obviously Eric, whatever they call him now, Red Beard, Rowan, and Alexa's probably in there too. So unless they want to, I sincerely hope that Matt Hardy, is involved in it, because I don't know if they really need that. But if they had those four, I'd say that'd be a good group. And it doesn't have to be what Bray Wyatt was. It can be like a derivative of it, and kind of, maybe there doesn't have to be so much the mystical stuff, they're just a tough group that beats the crap out of everybody, or they're a psychological kind of group or something like that. I'm definitely excited for that though too. I like Bo Dallas was, I really liked him when he was in there, when he was doing the Bo Leave stuff. So I like to see this new facet of his personality, for sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping they don't lean too much into the Uncle Howdy stuff, and more so it's just Bo Dallas leading this group, and maybe, you know, with the beard grown out, playing more of a serious character. My favorite version of the Wyatt family was the original, when he was just the swamp cult leader, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't get into all this fiend stuff and all this crazy stuff. It was just, they just were scary. And that's what you want in a heel group. And I'm hoping they go more psychological with Bo Dallas. And then he has this kind of group as backup. There's rumors too about possibly like a Joe Gacy joining the group. Maybe even a Dexter Lumis. We'll see what happens with that. I mean, I don't know. Dexter, he kind of lost some of that. I enjoy Dexter Lumis, but he got kind of unserious considering he's a serial killer. But, you know, it's, you know, but the whole Indy Hartwell stuff. So I'd be okay if he wasn't in the group. But, you know, Bo and those other guys that you mentioned should be pretty cool. I wouldn't mind seeing Nikki Cross maybe cross over into that group as well. I think that would work. I think she's a very underutilized talent. So there's lots going on. As far as, again, going with the Triple H book, and what were your thoughts on WrestleMania 40? We never got a chance to talk about that.
Well,
of course, the big story with WrestleMania 40.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought it was all great. After the quote unquote fan backlash or whatever, and they decided to change the format, to me, I really feel like maybe they kind of knew that they were going to end up with Cody and Roman. I don't think it was going to be Rock and Roman. They just were trying to gauge it just to see it. Maybe if the fans had a big reaction, they would have, you know, said, oh, maybe we switch to this and let, you know, Cody have the shot the second night or something like that. But the way they did it was perfect. Yeah, you know, Seth Rollins has a built-in story where he could say like, oh, I'm so mad about what they did to me at WrestleMania, and he's out now, and yet when he comes back he could just like turn on Cody and say like, you did this to me, you made me do this and I didn't want to do any of it and I lost my title, you know, and even Roman, you know, you kind of always figured, you know, if he had lost at WrestleMania that he was going to take some time off, and he is. And then, I mean, like the whole thing now where he's not being included in the draft, not under his accord. So yes, they're definitely, doing that stuff, but definitely, I was very happy, you know, as we've talked about that before with Cody, you know, be patient, you know, it's going to happen, and they're not going to like go 3 years with this kind of thing. And, you know, I was like some people, I was kind of concerned. They were looking at that Hogan thing and saying, well, you know, it's only this much more time until he breaks the Hogan record. But I mean, like someone said,
there is no record though. There's no Hogan record though. It's just third place. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what are they going to do then? Oh, well, now he has to be Bruno Sammartino. So he has to keep the belt like 9 more years, you know, like, but anyway, I was very happy with that. You know, the tag team titles. Oh, so glad they split those up. Oh my God. I was getting so tired of, you know, the.
What do you think of the new titles, by the way?
Really nice. The old school flair. It's like those ones that Demolition and the Hart Foundation used to have. Love it. But very happy for, everyone who won the titles in that one. I mean, I don't know how long they're going to last with the SmackDown guys there with Waller and Theory. But they got a good tag team name. I like that. A-Town Down Under.
A-Town Down Under, yeah.
Yeah, and that was really cool. So anyway, and I mean, even the way they did the lady stuff, you know, like... Rio, you know, wins it, and then unfortunately she got injured and they had to take the belt off her. And again, we can probably talk about that later, but I don't think that was the right choice going with Becky for the belt. You kind of want, you know,
it was anyway, a safe choice. It was a very safe choice.
It was the safest they could have went, and that was, you know, but yeah, overall WrestleMania both nights just fantastic. That did, you know, no one puts on a wrestling show like WWE, not even close, not anyone. So very happy with it.
I agree. The titles, they look great. The only thing I have against the Raw ones is just that I don't know why, but I don't like that circle around the thing. I'd rather just not have the circle around. It looks like a dinner plate or something like that. But other than that, it looks great. But yeah, if they didn't have that circle around, it would remind me of, like, remember the old TNA world title that Kurt Angle had? That was a very cool title. Yeah. So, but, and the ones, of course, I'm an old school fan. I loved kind of, it harkens back to, as you say, the Hart Foundation, Demolition. And then you throw in a little bit even before that, like say like the US Express and stuff like that, and the way the titles look. So yeah, good job on the titles. It's about time they split those up.
I think they realize how iconic the old ones looked, and they're like, well, if we can work an element of that and keep it kind of fresh, then we'll do that. And it, like, you know, I'm very surprised they haven't brought back some version of the Winged Eagle one yet. That's probably the next thing to come if they change the heavyweight ones again. But definitely the Intercontinental. I mean, it's really classy looking now too. And you know, just it's whoever's designing those, I just thumbs up to them. They're doing a great job.
Yeah, for sure. Because we went through some horrible ones for a little while.
No more spinner belts, please.
Yeah, none. All right, let's get into our main topic here, and it's the WWE draft that just took place over the last few weeks. And I've got my thoughts on it. You've got your thoughts. But first off, before we get going, I want to ask the question. There was a lot of conjecture online about this is horrible. I hated the draft. Nothing exciting happened. So first of all, I'm going to ask you, do you think the draft was that bad? Do you think it was bad? Do you think it lives up to all the crap that it's taking online or stuff like that? Or is that just fans? Because this is the age now, the fan will make something up in their mind and then get mad at a wrestling company if they don't do the thing that they made up in their mind, even though the wrestling company never mentioned anything about that. So, and I think that's what a lot of this was. I don't know what they're saying. Did they think MGF was going to get drafted or something like that? Like, I don't know. But off the cuff, like, what's your thoughts? Was it bad? Is it broken? Does it need to be fixed?
Oh, there's definitely some things they could change about it. Yep. I think they do a good job of making it an event and you want to watch it, but then it's just how they present it. And then just the sheer length of it and the way they do the picks, but yes. It's definitely something they need. Cause you got to shake up the rosters every once in a while. If you keep everybody there for years and years and years, you're going to be like, oh my God, how many more shots is Kevin Owens going to get? How many, you know, but I like the fact that they do that every once in a while. They just shake it up. But again, I definitely don't think it's as bad as it is. I love seeing all the nostalgic guys, the Dudleys coming out, you know, Teddy Long doing his little dance and, you know, JBL, Ron Simmons doing the damn, you know, like that's what you want, you know, and even like Alundra Blaze, whatever they call her now, was out there. And, you know, I do enjoy that aspect of it. They just, you know, obviously we will be talking about it, but that, you know, there's just things they can fix for sure and just make it more watchable for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think tweaks is what it needs because there was something about it that just felt not exciting. I'll put it that way because and especially where they had set rosters for each night, and it was definitely the better roster was night two on Raw, because my first two picks immediately would have been CM Punk and Drew McIntyre because it's the hottest thing going on any of the shows right now. And yet they didn't even go in the first round on night two, which is crazy. But I'm a numbers guy. So I wanted to go through because a lot of people said nobody moved, nothing happened. And so I pulled the numbers and on SmackDown on Friday, there were 16 picks on the show. Five of those picks were changes to the roster. So that's 31% of the roster. Well, let me remind people that, if they change 100% of the roster, you're just basically going to move Raw to SmackDown and SmackDown to Raw, and you have the same feuds going on. So they can't change everybody, right? But you kind of hope for around a 50%. After SmackDown, there were 7 picks, 2 changes, possibly 3 because I wasn't sure about what the OC was. I don't know if they were Raw or SmackDown, but let's say there was only 2. So that's 29% of the roster changed after the show. On Raw, you had a bit more. It was 24 picks on Raw. 10 changes, so that's 41% of the roster change shows. And I'm not including the fact that the LWO was 10 guys that moved over to one show. You know, I'm just saying one pick was a change. And then after Raw, there was 9 picks, 4 people changed. So that's 44%. So overall, you had 56 picks total, 21 changes. So that's 38% of the roster change, 6 of them being NXT call-ups, which is about, you know, 30% of your overall stuff. So to the argument that people made that there was no changes, well, that kind of shows that there was, you know, like I say, 38% of your roster change. If you get any higher than that, you've got the same rosters just switching brands. It's also, does that change your perspective any to hear those numbers?
I figured the SmackDown number was lower. To me, it's just, you know, part of it is just the sheer number of rounds and picks. Maybe they, you know, if they can cut that down a bit, maybe that solves a bit of the problem. You know, it just seems like there was a lot of picks where it's like, well, we're just keeping our own guy. We're keeping our own girl. We're keeping, you know, the champs stayed where they were, that, which is fine. But, you know, is that interesting for the viewer to say like, well, they just keep drafting all their own guys, you know, like nobody's really moving. It's like you said, if you start moving everybody around, you're going to just basically trade rosters. I mean, like I said, I think 50% is definitely the threshold. You can't go much more than that. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's just, I can see where they're kind of tied. You know, who knows? Maybe they're tied by restrictions with Netflix now, with what's going to happen there. I mean, who knows? So, you know, but definitely, I mean, another, to me, it just seems like a lot of the times when they have a draft like this, and it's a lot of the mid-carders moving, but it's the same people going back and forth almost every time. There's people that have, you know, like Natalia, I don't know, I don't think she moved in this one, but usually she's one of the ones that goes back and forth every time. So you know what I mean? But it's more of just like, you know, if you're going to do something like that, maybe just, maybe not quite the volume of it. If people are going to stay on their roster, just have them, you know, stay on their roster. Don't worry about the draft on them or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, there's definitely holes and things. Like, so let's just quickly go through before we get to our changes. The number one pick overall is Bianca Belair on SmackDown. I mean, I love Bianca, but I mean, they're obviously going for something here. All the buzz that's been going on over this past year with the WNBA and Caitlin Clark and all that stuff. Okay, let's have a woman go number one overall in the draft. And this sucks because I can't even say she was the first one to do it, because they, you know, they've had it happen before with Becky Lynch and Kelly Kelly of all people, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Jey Uso was the number one pick for Raw, which I like Jey, but I mean, the number one pick, I don't know. And then Carmelo Hayes was the number two pick overall, ahead of Seth Rollins and ahead of Randy Orton, which Carmelo's good, but I mean, come on, like this is something, and ahead of Bron Breakker as well, who just got signed to SmackDown, then gets brought. And we made a big deal like a month and a half ago about Bron Breakker being signed. Like, shouldn't he have been basically not eligible for the draft if you sign him? I'm going to get into something about that actually in my picks. We had Liv Morgan stay on Raw, which big deal. LA Knight stays on SmackDown. Ricochet, Raw, the Bloodline goes third. Like, sorry, the Bloodline. Like, you could have played into something with that. Like, they're the hottest angle in wrestling, period. Well, Roman was there, and they've got a unique angle going on right now with the whole Solo thing. But if they're going to drop that far, I wouldn't have even had to pick. I would have said neither of those general managers want to deal with these crazy men or something like that. And then you still have that story floating out there. Okay, Roman and the Bloodline, where are they going? Sheamus staying on Raw, that's okay. AJ Styles on SmackDown, Alpha Academy on Raw. Andrade and SmackDown. I don't even know who Andrade was with, to be quite honest. And then Kiana James going up to Raw. Again, a talented performer, but am I taking her over some of the other people? I don't know about that. After the show was the OC, Baron Corbin, Cedric Alexander, and Ashante the Adonis staying on SmackDown. And then Shayna Baszler, Zoe Stark, Alba Fire, and Isla Dawn, and Ivar going to Raw, which the only change was Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, which I'm okay. I like them. I think I think they're not pushing them enough. I'd rather see them than say like Candice LeRae and Indy. Yeah. And then on the night two, Imperium was the number one pick. I can roll with that. If it wasn't for Drew McIntyre and CM Punk being in the draft, I mean, if I'm Nick Aldis, I'm going right away. I'm going after one of those guys to get them on my show. It's the hottest angle. I would say that's the hottest angle right now, and there's not even a wrestling match happening.
Yep.
Jade Cargill is the number one pick for SmackDown. So two nights in a row, the number one pick for SmackDown is a female wrestler, right? And you still had Drew and CM Punk available. Damage Control goes to Raw. There's four people changed over right there. Kevin Owens stays with SmackDown ahead of Punk and McIntyre. Punk finally gets drafted by Raw in round two. The Pride stays with SmackDown. Braun Strowman was a bit of a surprise return. Raw, Tiffany Stratton, SmackDown ahead of Drew. The LWO was Raw in round three. SmackDown's Legado del Fantasma. Of course, they had to break those guys up. That's about 10 people going back and forth there. Drew finally goes to Raw in round three and Shinsuke to SmackDown. I'm glad to see Shinsuke change things up. Judgment Day in round four, Naomi to SmackDown. Ilya Dragunov comes up to Raw. Not a surprise there. We figured that as soon as WrestleMania, he showed up the night after. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven to SmackDown. SmackDown's really loading up their women's roster, even though they already had a loaded women's roster to start with. And I love Chelsea Green. I think she's been fantastic. I might even thought about putting the title on her during that battle royal.
Yeah.
New Day stays in Raw. Pretty Deadly stays in SmackDown. Lyra Valkyria comes up to Raw. SmackDown, Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. The Final Testament goes to Raw. Hopefully that leads to Karrion Kross doing something better. DIY goes to SmackDown. Bronson Reed stays in Raw. SmackDown gets Blair Davenport from NXT. A lot of female wrestlers going on mm-hmm. SmackDown. Then after the show, Apollo Crews, Giovanni Vinci, and Tegan Knox go to SmackDown. Natalya, Caden Carter, and Katana Chance. Odyssey Jones, Dijak up from NXT. I'm surprised they didn't do that on the main show, to be quite honest with you. Julius Creed, Brutus Creed, and Ivy Nile, Stan Ra, and then the new Catch Republic comes over to Ra. So, yeah, when you hear those names, not too exciting, to be quite honest, and some very interesting picks. So that just gives you an idea what's going on. Anything stand out about those picks to you?
Well, it's like you said. I mean, some of those ones that they announced later on were probably ones that could have gone on. And you know, like you said, Drew and CM Punk, I was just kept waiting and waiting. I was just like, what? That's weird, eh? Like,
yeah.
But again, you know, obviously it's a work draft, as they say.
It
so
is.
They know they're it not going to pick anyone like that. But I mean, that's maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's, you know, you want to see just one or two surprise picks, you know, like there wasn't really a ton of surprises. I didn't think anyway, like the NXT ones were kind of surprises, but I mean, everyone knew Dragunov was coming up when he lost the title, you know, it was pretty much a lock and he's ready to go. And I don't know, he may end up with Imperium as they say, which would be kind of cool. So, you know, I don't know. But yeah, just it seems like a lot. It seems like a lot of non-movement just to keep announcing non-movement. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't seem like it's like they're not going anywhere. It's like, oh, okay, thanks.
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's get into some thoughts on what we would do to jazz this up a little bit. So I'm going to let you do the lead off since you're the guest, Steve. Cool. And then even if I've got some things that are similar, I'll let you do your whole spiel and then I'll give you my spiel and we'll see what we come up with. See if we can knock each other's socks.
You want the whole thing? All right. Okay. I got about five things here. So,
okay.
Number one, have a prospects round. So that like have it like the amateur draft in pro sports, you know, like hockey and stuff like that. Just call it like the first round. It's the people coming up from NXT.
Yeah.
So then Raw would have three. SmackDown has three. And you know, you keep it at the same format as they had with all the people sitting in the little arena there. And when someone gets called up, they get a hat. A whole round of that, I'd be in. I'd 100% be in.
Okay.
Number
just
two.
Just a quick, sorry, yes. One quick question for you, Steve. I should have asked this. Would you do the draft like the same thing like a few weeks after Mania or would you do it the night after Mania?
I don't think you do it the night after Mania because that's like a big show. But like, I think this is perfect. You know, going into the summer and you know, getting ready for SummerSlam. I think, yeah, late April, May is pretty good to go.
Okay. Yep.
So I would keep that. Yep. Number two, less rounds, obviously. Just, you know, you just keep the, you know, the thing going by just announcing people who are moving. You know what I mean? Like, you know, have like maybe two rounds on SmackDown, two rounds on Raw, but it's like you know, six picks in each round, one for Raw, one for SmackDown, kind of thing. And then that's like, you know, what would that be? Six and six, so that's 12, and then another 12 the next night. I mean, that seems like a good number, and you don't have to go like in the eighth round of the come on now, like. So I thought maybe that might be an idea. More impactful picks was what I said. So the champs are obviously locked in now. That's what they told us. I remember on old drafts, champs were getting drafted. So, I mean, you know, that was pretty exciting. But, you know, it just seemed like a lot of the big names, there wasn't really any giant names that change hands. And it's like you said, you know, they kind of, you know, got to keep, you know, some stability and then the big contenders. But again, I thought maybe this was probably something to do with maybe Netflix was saying, okay, well, this is what we want on the show for, you know, January of 2025. So put these people on the show and stuff like that. Yeah, maybe you could... you know, have a pick, you know, from the brand, not just protecting your own guys, but, you know, maybe just like, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say, but they, you know, they seem to be, you know, not really caring that they're just keeping people on the same show. If you're not drafted, you know, during the 12 picks of each night of the draft, then you just stay where you are. And that's, you know, the way it is. It's just like, you know, and then you can just say, you know, like the one guys were like, well, I was picked in the pick and I went to SmackDown. I'm the number one guy. And then, you know, the rest of the, and, you know, they could just say, well, you never got picked. So no one, you know, they could use it as a storyline kind of thing, you know, like the number one pick thing is definitely something they could use for sure. Another thing I thought of was revenge picks. So one GM picks someone from the one brand that the GM was really high on. So the next pick, the GM says, "Oh yeah, well, you think that's bad? I'm going to take Kevin Owens from your brand, and he's coming back to Raw." You know, and the crowd would go crazy.
I like that. Yeah, I like
that. And then you get more of a rivalry between Aldis and Adam Pearce. I love Adam Pearce, by the way. He's one of my favorites.
I love both of them. Oh, yeah. Aldis is fantastic. I want to see him in the ring soon, though.
It's happening. They said he's been training for, but he had that thing with his shoulder and. Yeah, I would like to see him and Adam go. Adam is a really good wrestler, man. Scrap.
I thought they were going to go on at Mania. I thought we were going to have a match between the two of them, but of course, yeah. Aldis got injured there. But I always thought when Aldis walked around with that NWA title, I thought he looked like the ultimate. Like he looked like Flair or something like that. Oh, yeah, I'd love to see him. Love to see him with that WWE title.
First time I saw Aldis, I said he looks exactly like Hugh Jackman, 100%. I don't know what it is. Anyway, okay, so that revenge picks was another one. Now I know they said the rosters are open till May the 6th or whatever they got for more moves. So they could make a trade or whatever. What I said, why not make a trade during the draft? You know what I mean? Like you trade one guy for a tag team or something like that. Imagine someone come up to the microphone and going, ladies and gentlemen, before we make the next pick, we have a trade to announce, going from Raw to SmackDown. It would just, add up to the drama. And again, that would be another thing where you could work into the storyline. You know, maybe a GM's fed up with one of the wrestlers and he just says, guess what? You're getting traded to Raw. I don't want
you. Or, somebody gets two picks in a row because they just traded that pick in order to get this person, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then, and like I said, then you get another possibility for revenge pick and more drama,
Yeah.
And the final thing I said was, more splitting up of kind of these big factions, I'm not saying take like one guy from Joaquin Wilde and I always forget his partner's name, but no, don't take one of
Bruce
those guys.
Del Toro. Yeah.
But then you could still move, like you could say, like getting drafted to Raw, Carlito, and they're like, oh my god, but he's with the LWO, but I mean, he's not now, obviously. Or I know they kicked Giovanni out, but it would have been cool to the drama if after the match they had announced the pick and they said Giovanni is drafted to SmackDown, and then just like, what? No. Just have a little bit of drama. So I thought that might be a thing. You got the factions that have like four and five guys. It's just sort of like you want that shocking pick. I can't believe they took that guy. But they seem to be into this idea of it's like, well, if you draft one guy, it's the whole, the whole. Faction goes over. I can see that, but I think that would add a lot to the drama for sure. That was the main ones.
The whole thing with the factions going over, it's like it's almost lazy. It's like, all right, let's just toss these guys over here. Like I'd rather see some. I'd love to see a GM say, yeah, I'm gonna take Karrion Kross. I think the rest of his faction is garbage, but I know that guy you see a diamond in the rough, like maybe you do take Joaquin Wilde or something and say, this guy's going to be something special and I need to get him out of this faction or something like that, right? Or Dominic, somebody takes Dominic Mysterio or something like that.
I was going to say, how crazy would it have been to get Montez Ford, take him from the Street Profits? Because, everybody knows he's the better guy to that, and just have the other guy stick with Bobby or something like that. Oh, my God. And then you could have, a new Street Profits with Carmelo Hayes and the other guy or something. You know what I mean? But after SmackDown, I'm not pretty sure he's not going to join that faction. But anyway, you know what I mean? That would have been, crazy insane if they said, oh, we're taking Montez Ford to Raw. I would have been like, oh yes, because I think he's fantastic and he deserves to be a singles guy, but he's been with the other fellow for a long time, so I guess it's at some point they got to break them up. That's all I'm saying.
Honestly, I had mentioned this a long time ago about the Street Profits and break them up, but I still think that Dawkins has the potential to be a big star himself. Yeah. If you go with a heel Dawkins or something like that, right?
For sure.
But not go with the Reverend Dawkins, kind of like Reverend Devon.
That's right.
But yeah, okay. Well, I like a lot of that. Yeah, especially like the prospects round and stuff. That kind of goes with what I'm about to drop here too. But and the trades and just the jazzing it up, because it becomes a little bit too obvious what's going on, right?
Yeah,
I love that idea about the trades, and then maybe you have two picks in a row. So in a situation where you have Punk and McIntyre, and you want to keep them on your thing. So if Raw has the first pick, all right, they trade the they trade somebody for that second pick, so they make sure they get Punk and McIntyre one after the other, right?
Yeah,
that would be, and even show them both coming out on the stage at the same time, yeah, or something like that, and the drama with that. I like that idea too, especially if it was somebody, say, like, you know, you just picked Bron Breakker the other night, and Aldis is like, okay, well, I'm going to be picking these guys. Or you can trade me Bron Breakker and you can get that pick, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. Or draft them back at the end, maybe with the last pick. We're taking Bron Breakker back, you know, like the crowd would go crazy. Yeah, yeah.
And I want to see some reaction in the war room where people are like, you know, just pissed off about a pick. You know, my favorite moment of any draft is when they showed the war room going nuts about drafting Natalya one year. I'm like, come on, like, nobody is going nuts about drafting Natalya. I appreciate Natalya for what she's done, but nobody is celebrating drafting Natalya.
I don't even think Tyson Kidd is getting that excited.
No, exactly. But yeah, so definitely you could spice it up. So, all right, I'm going to drop mine here, and now I'm going totally kayfabe with all this stuff, but hey, it's wrestling. You might as well, right? But
yep.
And I know people are going to say, well, that logistically doesn't matter, but it's wrestling, and we're talking kayfabe and stuff like that. So I'm going to completely napalm the entire wrestling scenario here. Originally, when I first was going on about the draft, because it doesn't feel monumental or exciting or anything like that, and I think it's because of all these people that stay in the same place and the champs being locked and stuff. I agree with the champions being locked, though, because you can't have all of a sudden things get switched over, and you know, as soon as the WWE champ gets drafted the one, then of course the world champ's gonna get drafted the other, so there's again, there's no drama with that, you know. It's like when Cena and Batista went back and forth and things, so I'm okay with the champs being locked in. But here's what I want to see changed, here's what I'm going to propose. So originally I said they should do it the night after Mania, because I'm like, let's keep the momentum going, let's start the new season. But now I've thought about things. I'm saying, no, I like it. Let's do it, you know, leading up to that pay-per-view, the Backlash pay-per-view. So they've got basically 3 weeks after Mania. The reason being is because I'm going to say going forward that every wrestler on WWE's roster that was there the WrestleMania prior, their contracts in kayfabe only last 1 year, and they run out at the day after WrestleMania. Okay. Yeah. So that now that 3 week period until the draft is like your moratorium, where you have to do free agent signings, right? You have to sign all these wrestlers back. You can also sign them to an extension during the year if you want, but I don't want to get into that too much. But I want to see that they have to sign these wrestlers. Make it a big deal when they do sign. You know, breaking news alert. Just found out from GM Nick Aldis that he signed Seth Rollins to a 1 year contract, and he will be going to SmackDown effective May 6th or whatever date the Raw is, right? Anybody who gets obviously called up or brought to the roster, if Ricky Starks come over from AEW in November, of course their contract will carry over. I don't want to see, it's like the whole Bron Breakker. I mean, you can't make a big deal about signing Bron Breakker a month and a half ago and then he gets drafted a month later. Like, that's stupid. Like, that makes no sense, right? So anybody after the fact, you know, that signed midseason, their contract goes to the next WrestleMania, is my theory on that, okay? So you spend that first 3 weeks doing a couple of things. It's a free agent signing frenzy, period, right? And you keep announcing them on the shows. Mm-hmm. It's also a trade window. So once you sign somebody, you can trade some people, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. If you trade somebody during the year, no trades during the year, just during this window, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, it's going to be like your build up to your NXT people. You're going to spend that whole 3 weeks featuring NXT people like they do with the NFL draft, and like they're talking about Caleb Williams being the number one pick and what they do. You've got Pat McAfee on that show who came from the NFL. He knows what this looks like. I want to see, like, basically it look like the Sports Center group that's analyzing the draft leading up to it and stuff like that. I'll see Cole, McAfee, Barrett, and Graves on a panel for those 3 weeks in between Mania and the draft, okay, and they're constantly just, it's like an NFL show, that type of idea where they're talking about, they're doing features on these stars. They're talking about them. So when this comes draft time, you know who these NXT people are, right? And I want them ranked in as who's number one, who's number two, all that stuff, just like the NFL. I want the draft to only be NXT people. Mm-hmm. So you know you're going to call up whatever, 6 to 10. Maybe you only have 10 draft picks that night, right?
Yep.
But also you're having some signings and you're having some trades that night, because mm-hmm. you can't just have a show about the draft. It's got to have wrestling in between. But I would like say maybe the first hour is the draft or something like that. Then you have your wrestling show, and through the night you also have free agent signings and stuff. Anybody that you don't sign from the main roster gets put into the draft. You could have it that way too, right? Mm-hmm. But I want it to be about the NXT. So when Carmelo Hayes is ranked number one overall, and there's the conjecture, is he going number one? Is he not going number one? Is it Tony D'Angelo going number one? The other thing is I want NXT to be able to, their talent to declare for the draft.
Oh, so, that'd be awesome.
You know, just like an NFLer does, right? Like a college yep. football player, you declare for the draft. So if Tony D'Angelo wants to stay down and finish his feud with Trick Williams or something like that, then he doesn't declare for the draft that year. You know what I mean? Money in the Bank. This is going to come into play here because I'm tired of the Money in the Bank scenario. It's just become overused. It's like, it's not fun anymore when somebody, you know, they cash in, they're going to win the title. Big deal. Okay. Whatever. It's done. I know they've had a few failures and stuff like that. For the most part, the Money in the Bank, look at what happened to Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. Yeah, it was kind of exciting. You weren't expecting it. But then afterwards, you're like, well, Damian's kind of a sitting duck champion, because we really did want Drew McIntyre to have the title. We want him to feud with CM Punk over the title when he gets back. Yeah. So yeah, it popped a moment, but it wasn't really that big a deal, right? So I think Money in the Bank, forget that it's for the title anymore. The title shot, change it to it's a WrestleMania match, and the winner of the Money in the Bank gets to pick what brand they go to.
Oh.
And they get like a high dollar value contract or something like that too. So it means something, right? Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, that kind of thing. So that's where that comes in. But yeah, that's for me. I think you have basically had the main roster set before the draft happens in that 3 week period. And you're talking in all through the show. It's like the old ESPN do, 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 where it's a breaking headline. And it's like, yeah. Seth Rollins just signed with Raw. Cody's the champion, but whoever, Drew McIntyre just signed with whatever, or, you know, CM Punk's holding out. You know, he's waiting until the draft. He's going to declare for the draft because he's holding all, he doesn't want to sign with anybody. He wants to see what, I don't know, do it some way, right? And just have that, pump up your NXT people. Let us know who these people are. Do features on them. Have people, guests like Bubba and D-Von and Medusa mm-hmm. and all these people coming on the show as guest analysts saying, yeah, no, I've been scouting this person for a while. You should know this, this, and this about them. Talk about that. Have Vic Joseph and Booker T come up because they're doing the announcing for NXT. Just pump up the NXT people. Yeah, some people watch it and they know who Ilya Dragunov is, but a lot of people didn't. And that's because they only have 600 and something thousand viewers a week watching that show. So they don't know what's her name, Lyra Valkyria, and they don't know those types of people. Yeah, they did a great job when they got drafted to show that little video package. But coming into it, you weren't excited. You were like, who? Who is this? But if you know that, here's your list of the top 10 or 15 NXT stars, and maybe they don't get drafted and they go back into the NXT pool. And I think NXT should be able to protect their champions as well, because that screws up your whole, like, Trick Williams wins Stand and Deliver and all of a sudden he's getting drafted. Like, that doesn't make sense or whatever, you know, as far as that. But anyways, that's what I think. I think it make it centric to NXT, lock in your rosters, have that free agent signing frenzy, have a trade window, and then there you go. Like, you know, and anybody who comes up through the year, they're not eligible for the draft, and make that Money in the Bank somebody who picks the, what do you call it, their own brand. And especially even if it's, like, say, a tag team or something like that, you know, maybe the tag team picks their brand or something. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, even to go with that, you know, like the analysts coming up, even have Shawn Michaels come up, that'd be, you know, he knows them better than anybody. I mean, just have him say, like, Shawn, what do you think? You know, like, yeah, no, this guy's the number one pick. He's got high star potential, you know, like something like that. That's great. I was going to mention one thing I really did like, though. they had at the bottom of the screen, they had, you know, best available picks. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But they put like Cedric Alexander in there. I'm like, well, best available. I mean, really?
And what anyway, imagine too, if you had like, okay, so the first week, they start pumping these NXT people. By the end of the week, they've now given their initial, or before the week starts, like going into WrestleMania, here's your top 10 NXT people. After Stand and Deliver, that changes. Somebody moves up, you know, in the pecking order. After a few more weeks, somebody else moves up. And now the argument is, you're having this argument with the announcers. Okay, so is Carmella the number one pick, or is Trick Williams the number one pick? Who do we think? Is Dragunov better than Carmella? And they're going 1-2 to the point that you're pumping it up to whoever's making the draft pick. Did they make the right call? Is this the true number one? You know, just like the NFL, like, do you go with the quarterback? Do you go with the wide receiver? You know, that kind of stuff.
Even in that vein too, you could have, you know, wins and losses kind of like, oh, he's on a 3-match win streak. He shot up from 4-2, you know, like,
yes.
You know, the general managers are looking at this guy, you know, like, you know, that's the kind of thing I like.
You show the, you know, you can do vignettes where guys are going into interviews with each general manager, you mm-hmm. know, like the NFL, that kind of stuff. Right. And like, they're having their interview and they're shaking hands afterwards. You have that moment with the phone call, like where the guy's going to get picked, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, just
for sure. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think this should be all about NXT though. It's a mm-hmm. draft. It's not, this isn't a roster shakeup. It's a draft. So make it about a draft, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No, that was the first thing I had written down. So great minds think alike there, BC.
We'll do well with our NSWF, you know, when we have that going.
Yeah.
The Nova Scotia Wrestling Federation will have the greatest draft ever.
Yeah.
I forgot one other thing. You could have added into the draft people that are from the independent scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Obviously, WWE has signed them. But don't let them know, like kayfabe, that people don't know that they're signed, but have them, you know, all of a sudden draft pick is, somebody recent that just got signed, but that was on the independent scene. But if you had
his name, that Sean Spears, maybe.
Spears or Eric Rowan or if you knew you're signing MJF, you know, that kind of thing. Right. You know,
oh, you'd get a big pop out of that.
Number one pick on there, right? Have some people that are independent that don't get drafted, but it screws up your top 10, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah,
call it like a wild card pick or something like that. All of a sudden, you know, they're going to use their wild card pick. Oh my god, who is it? You know, the crowd would go nuts.
Yeah. So there you go. Well, so
and then you've got all those, you know, the potential guys coming in for the Bloodline. I mean, obviously they're going to get drafted to the Bloodline, but I mean, there's at least like Zilla and Jacob Fatu. They're both probably coming. So, I mean, that's going to be a crazy new Bloodline too. So, I mean, guys like that, you know, getting signed. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, that'd be very exciting.
Yeah. What if Jacob Fatu was in your list of your NXT people?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's like, man, like that. Now, who's number one? Is Dragunov number one? Is Fatu number one?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, and you haven't even seen him. You haven't seen him wrestle. No. It's like having a guy over in the KHL, and you're trying to rank him amongst the Quebec League guys. You're like, oh, what? I have never seen him, but they're high on him. You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, anything like that would just like that would be 100%. The crowd would be like, "Oh my god, can you imagine if they pick someone from MLW this time?" Oh
yeah,
my god. What do Impact?
Jordan Grace, Grace, or Hammerstone, or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, wow, you know that'd be pretty cool if you had that opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Anyways, that's our thoughts. There you go. WWE, feel free to send the residuals to us when you change things up and. Go from there. But before we get going on this, anything to add on that, the whole draft scenario? Or are you good that you've got your point across?
Yeah, I think I spit out all my fire on that one. I think I did, you know, that's it just generally make it more exciting. Like we said, I mean, like what is happening? You know, like, you know, just, you know, announcing people that are staying is just not exciting. You know what I mean? That's the main thing that I'm just, you know, make it more exciting.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get into your real specialty here, Steve, before we get going. And for wrestling fans, I tell you, don't turn this off. You need to broaden your horizons. Get into more sports. Start watching hockey. Support Canadians in this. But We're going to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. Let's get your thoughts here. I'm going to let you do the lead on this because I haven't been following things as much this year. But, you know, from being a Canadian, I'm required to know something about hockey. But we're now into round two of the playoffs. The only series that hasn't been decided in round one is the Knights and the Stars as far as that. But I'll get your predictions of that. But let's start with that, actually. Who do you think is going to advance in that series, the Knights and the Stars?
Well, I have written down here. I said, well, I don't think it matters because whoever's winning that series is losing to Colorado. I suspect it's probably going to be Vegas just because they have a pretty good roster from last year. But I feel like whoever wins that is losing to Colorado guaranteed. I think that's probably one of the big locks of the next round for sure.
Colorado, man, just McKinnon, just a beast, so right?
That's those Nova Scotia boys, eh?
Yeah, I know. They plowed through Winnipeg, so that was pretty easy for them. Were you surprised at how quick that series went?
Not really. I mean, Colorado's just a really good team. They're built to win, and you didn't really hear too much about them. They were kind of a streaky team, so I think the teams that consistently win two out of three during the season, they pretty much go pretty far. So that's Colorado in a nutshell.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's go over to the other side on the Western Conference. We've got the Vancouver Canucks, who seemed to at first had a little trouble with Nashville. They seemed to dispatch with them pretty easily there, 4-2 in that series. And then the juggernaut that is the Edmonton Oilers. They're going off. So of course, round two. Here we go. We're already going to eliminate one of the Canadian teams because that's the way things go. But so we got Vancouver against Edmonton. What's your pick in this series?
Oh, got to go Edmonton. They're due. I mean, Connor McDavid's playing at a super high level now. Leon Draisaitl's playing at a super high level. I mean, Zach Hyman is playing at a super level. I remember him with Toronto. He was a 25-goal guy. Now he's a 50-goal scorer. I mean, what's going on there? I mean, mind you could put me on a line with Connor McDavid, I'd probably get 30.
Yeah.
I'm 50 years old.
It's like Semenko when he was with when he's with Gretzky. Eh?
Yeah. So I don't think Edmonton should have too much troubles. I mean, 4-1, 4-2, I could see that series, but Edmonton's taking it for sure. It's not going seven games for sure.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. I'm picking Colorado and I'm picking Edmonton to advance in those two series. I mean, just two powerhouse teams, a ton of scoring going on there. But
it's
also
7-8, 8-7 every night.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the old school NHL there. So, all right. So our Western Conference final, we're both in agreement. We think it's going to be Edmonton to Colorado. Who do you got advancing to the Stanley Cup finals?
Oilers. I think Oilers are going to be Colorado. Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really like probably 6 or 7 game series, but I just think Edmonton is putting the push on this year. I think they know that they can't keep this team together. It's sort of like the Leafs. I mean, how long can you keep those guys together and not win something? You know what I mean? So I think this is the year. I think McDavid's driven, and I think he's going to get to the finals this year.
Wow. Okay. Good call on that. My heart would be with the Oilers. I'd love to see them get to the finals, win the Stanley Cup, all that good stuff. I'm going to pick Colorado just because they have that experience and man, they are a good team too. But I think this is going to be probably the most entertaining series of them all.
It's
Colorado Edmonton. It's going to be like 12-11 or something like that in every game. And, just tons of points, fights, all that good stuff. But okay, so you're going Edmonton. I'm going Colorado on that one. Although my heart is with Edmonton. I'd love to see it. But I just feel like there's that Canadian curse going on right now with these hockey teams. But it would be nice to see. Let's go over to the Eastern Conference. So we have Florida against Boston. We just mentioned Boston had that nail biter, and they got a lot taken out of them in that series with Toronto. And Florida dispatched of Tampa Bay. Probably the end of the Stamkos run over in Tampa Bay as well. Who do you got in this series? And feel free to go Homer with this. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, I kind of have to. I'm going with Boston. I mean, I got the shirt up behind me. I can't not. But if you look back at the regular season, and now mind you, one of the games was before that Florida made trades or anything like that, but Boston won all the 3 or 4 meetings, I believe. I'm not 100% sure if it was 4 or 3. Anyway, Boston pretty much won every game against them. They do have some good players that they acquired at the deadline. But I think Boston might just defensive wise be able to take them. I know they got a lot of hard hitters on Florida. You got Tkachuk and Lundell and some of those guys, but Boston now has Pat Maroon out there. We have Brazeau. There's a few other fellows that are the younger guys. Mason Lowry is out there hitting people all the time. So I think we match up better with this lineup that we have this year than we did last year for the, you know, the 3-1 disaster from last year. So I think it's, again, probably going to be another deep series, but I think I really am truly in my heart think Boston advances on that one.
Who's got the better goaltending in this series?
Boston, for sure. I do like Bobrovsky, but I think Boston as a team, the two goalies together have way better. I wouldn't even be surprised to see Allmark start the first game against Florida just because he hasn't played the whole series. And he played really well against Florida all year. So I think he might even get the start in the first game, despite Swayman's, you know, heroic efforts against Toronto, for sure.
I think that's what it'll come down to, is who's got the better goaltending in this. You know, you got the two best teams basically in the conference right there, or not in the car, in that side of the conference right there with the Florida and Boston. It's funny, a 7-game series can do one of two things to a team. Either it just completely wears them down and that's it. They fought hard and you know, you get that letdown. But the Bruins shouldn't have a letdown. They should have beat Toronto in that series, right? Yeah. And I think they got a scare is what they got with it. And that can like gel a team, I find. Sometimes you'll see a nice little magical run. Florida's kind of been sitting on the sidelines, and they have way too easy in the team with that time with that Tampa Bay team.
Yeah.
And that can hurt you sometimes as well. And now we're getting down to who's going to be the bigger pest. Is it going to be Tkachuk or is it going to be Marchand? And I think Marchand's going to cause Tkachuk to kind of go off the rails. I'm with you. I'm going to go with Boston. I would not be shocked if Florida did, but I think Boston is going to be energized by this Leafs scare. They got the better goaltending. They've got the experience as well. And I'm going to say Boston makes it to one more round, at least here on this one.
I would say too, like, defensive wise, like there's pretty much no better team right now than Boston. Like just, yeah, you know, I'm not worried about the defense. It's the scoring that's got me worried. I mean, when, you know, three straight 2-1 games and you lose two of them. I mean, you gotta, you know, I know Pastrnak got the winner last night, but they gotta, you know, some of those guys, Marchand, Zacha has never had a playoff goal, which is crazy. And Pastrnak and DeBrusque started the series really well. He needs to pick it up too. So if these guys are, you know, playing, you know, full tilt, I think we have a better overall team than Florida. I think we should beat them.
Yeah. As long as the defense is playing well, the scoring will eventually wake up. And like you say, the goaltending can carry you through. Look at the Canadians that year, 93, right? Okay. Over to one that, you know, it always seems like this side of the fence kind of gets forgotten about, but it's the Rangers and Carolina. Who do you got going in this one?
Well, that's going to be tough.
That's an easy team, but both of them had an easy time in round one.
Yeah, and that's, I think this is where the easy time stopped for both teams. I think this one's going 6-7 for sure. I picked Carolina just because they've been pretty good all year. The Rangers are a great team. I just don't think they're at that step yet to make it to the, you know, to the semifinals. I think that Carolina is looking like a team that, you know, wants to try to win a cup this year. They got Orlov and some of those other players this year, and definitely they built up the roster. So I think they'll squeak it out for sure, probably 6 or 7 games.
Okay. I'm going to go against you. I'm going to say the Rangers because I'm predicting an original 6 in the Eastern Conference final. So Boston
like
and the Rangers.
Team.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go Rangers in that one, but either team could easily win that series. That's kind of a flip them, you know, in one of those. So, all right, so now let's get down to it. So you've got the Oilers advancing in the in yours, and I've got the Avalanche. Who do you got advancing, and do I even need to ask in this case? So you've got the Bruins against Carolina. Who do you think's advancing?
I just want it so bad. I'm just going to say Boston. I don't really have any you know, evidence to back it up. I just think they might win. And Carolina, it's one of those things, like you said before, in my heart, I know probably Carolina would probably beat them, but I just want Boston to win. So I'm going to pick Boston just to have one prediction out there for Boston to beat someone in the semifinals. Okay.
I'm going to predict the Rangers advance in a hard fought series, but I think I think Boston's going another 7 against Florida.
Yeah.
And I think it's just going to be too much. They're just going to be worn down. Yeah.
The injuries are going to pile up probably too.
especially if that scoring doesn't come back for them. I think the Rangers beat them. So I've got a Colorado Rangers final. You've got an Edmonton Boston final. Hey, so you're going back to the old 80s and the Billy Ranford days, right?
Yeah.
Or are we going to have fog during the game is the question.
Oh, geez. Well, that was the old Boston Garden. I think they fixed that problem maybe, hopefully by now.
All right. Well, who's your pick in the finals?
Well, see, that's where I'm going to finally go against my own team and say if Boston and Edmonton play in the finals, I think the Oilers are a little bit better this year, and I think it's probably going to be the Oilers one way or the other.
Okay, yeah.
Honest. Hate to say it. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, who knows? I mean, 2011, I didn't think Boston was going to, you know, beat Montreal the first round, and they beat them, and it was the same sort of scenario in overtime in Game 7. So, you know, maybe they got it in them to win it this year. I would love them to prove me wrong. That's all I can say.
Well, I appreciate the honesty. Like, you're not showing homerism in that.
No.
So, I think it's
kind of, but not until
I think end. No matter who comes from the West, they win the cup. So I'm going to go with Colorado over the Rangers. But if Edmonton advances, I think Edmonton wins. I really hope, I hate how we get these rehashes of, like, if I see Edmonton Carolina again, I'm going to be like, oh, it's just memories of the old, what was it, the finals that they lost? Was it Edmonton and Carolina? Back in 2004 or something like that.
Yeah, with the Ryan Smith, whatever it was, the fella.
Yeah, the goal that should have been or whatever. Anyways, but yeah, so I just hate the idea of a Stanley Cup going back to Carolina. So that's why I'm picking the Rangers. But yeah, I think it's going to be Colorado wins that series, or if Edmonton advances, it's Edmonton, one of the others. Yeah. The Cup is staying in the West this year. So.
Well, if Edmonton wins, I wouldn't mind that. You know, if they take the Cup back to Canada, as long as it's not Montreal or Toronto, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm okay with Montreal, but Toronto, never.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just never going to happen.
keep the streak going at, what is it, 57 or 58 years?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Blackhawks fan, so I got nothing to talk about this year. But the future is bright for them with Bedard. Yeah. So, yeah. All right, before we close off, any wild predictions after the finals are over? You know, free agents, anything like that? Any predictions about who's going where?
Well, until Nylander signed with Toronto, that big contract, I almost thought that he's good friends with Pastrnak, apparently. I thought maybe that was a good shot. He might end up in Boston with Pastrnak. But now... wildly enough, and this is going to sound super crazy, but I think they got a good shot at Steven Stamkos. I think I saw it when they ended that series. He looked around in the arena like, you know, he was kind of like almost like, this is the end here. I know it's the end. So I think Boston has $28 million in cap space they got to go with. All their defense is signed up and their main forwards are signed up. All they got to sign up is Jeremy Swayman out of that. So I just feel like there's a good shot at it. Other than that, to be honest, I don't really know a ton of players that are going to be the free agents this year. So that's the only one I can think of. But I have a feeling that Stamkos may end up with Boston somehow.
Wow. That'd be huge.
Yep.
That'd be huge. Okay. And anything that you see, like, as far as it might not be free agents, but trades and stuff like that, you see any of these dynasties breaking up, like the Oilers, the Leafs, those type of things?
I was listening to Kiprios last night. He's pretty sure that Marner's not going to be back with Toronto. I think that's a big one. He would never end up in Boston, obviously. And then they said Tavares as well. He's got big anchor of a contract there. It's like 10.75 or something million. And they got to do something now. Like, they're getting tight against the cap. They have four players that are eating up almost half, actually over half their cap if I think about it right now. So I think that's going to happen. As far as Boston goes, I would not be surprised to see Ullmark traded. I think he stayed at the deadline and they want to stay together as long as possible. But I think they may, depending on what happens in these playoffs, I think they may trade Ullmark and try to get some picks or, you know, a good young prospect for him of some kind for sure. So that's always a possibility. Cause I mean, they, like I said, the rumors were there that they were going to trade him at the deadline and he said no. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if that happens. I don't want the goalie hug to disappear. That's for sure. But it might be gone.
Okay. What about the Oilers? Anything you see happening there?
I think they have a really good unit and they know, they have, Dreisaitl and McDavid. Dreisaitl's, I think, due for a big extension. So, again, it could all depend on, you know, how these playoffs go. If they lose this round, maybe someone takes off finally. But I think Hyman knows he's got his bread buttered there for a few years with McDavid, and you know McDavid really likes him. So I don't think anyone like that's going. You may see like a Evander Kane get shipped out of there after the season as well. Generally, with the Oilers, their biggest sticking point is always going to be the goaltending. And it's almost like, you know, they just can't seem to find anybody. I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a trade coming with Boston where Ullmark goes to Edmonton. Who knows? I mean, it could be something along those lines. But, I mean, don't quote me on any of this. I'm just making predictions. But, yeah.
Do you think it's make or break for the Oilers? If they win the Cup, they keep the unit together. If they lose the Cup, they blow it up?
I don't think they blow up the big stars, but they may, like I said, they may start dismantling some of the other stuff. Like Bryant Nugent-Hopkins, I think, is kind of one of those guys where he's shown a little bit, but you know what I mean? If they don't win, he could be a guy. He's a big contract. They could get rid of him. Other than that, like I said, the main guys are pretty much locked down. And Draisaitl, I think, as Lazy said, is due for a big contract, or if he hasn't already signed one. So I don't think it's more, I think the more drastic a blow up comes in Toronto probably as a result of this. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, at least the Oilers have won series in the last little while, so they know they have the ability to win. With Toronto, they've won one series in, I think, something like 13 years. I don't know if my math is correct, but it's unbelievable just the fact that they haven't even, you know, that they do so well in the regular season and just don't get there. I mean, mind you, I shouldn't talk. My Bruins do the same thing. You know, they have a great season and then losing the first round lately, but you know, at least this time they advanced one extra round. But anyway, yeah, I'd say the big blow up is probably coming in Toronto more so than Edmonton for sure.
Do you see them blowing it up a bit and then signing Stamkos?
I could honestly, that would be my nightmare to see Stamkos go to Toronto.
He's a Toronto boy, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it might come down to money unless they can move some of those big contracts out. I don't see where they have the space for that. I mean, their defense is basically cobbled together from like, you know, minor league guys who are making like less than $1 million. So, you know, they just, I can't, you know, I mean, that's probably a good, you know, if he goes somewhere, that's probably his number one choice is Toronto, to be honest. But I like I said, I really, in my brain, think he may look at Boston as a spot.
Okay, cool. And one last hockey question for you. Alex Ovechkin, does he stick around? Does he break Gretzky's record for goals?
100%. He's not going anywhere. He'll play till he's 40 for sure if he can get close to that record. He's, what, 40-something, 42, is it, or 40 away? So he's close enough.
Let me see. So, yeah, he's only 38, eh? That's pretty crazy. Yeah. He is – Gretzky's 894, Ovechkin's 853.
Yeah, so he's pretty close. I'd say
41 goals away.
Yeah, now – At this age, he's going to have to play, you know, pretty much, you know, out of his mind to get 41 in a season. Now, I think he had, what, 34 this year, 33?
I'm checking right now for you.
Something along those lines.
He had 31 this year.
Exactly. So, I mean, for him to get 42 at the age of 38 is going to be like a miracle. But like I said, he's, you know, I think he knows he's, you know, within a year and a half or so of getting that. Like you look at October of, what, 2026 would probably be about the time now. I'd say October or November of 2026, he's probably closing in on that mark, and I'd say he sticks around. I think he ends up with over 900. That's my prediction for Ovechkin.
It's pretty crazy when you think about it, because I'm just looking at the numbers here. Ovechkin is 853. He's played less games than Gretzky overall. Played 1,426. Gretzky played 1,487. But interesting statistic, Gretzky got his 500th goal in game number 575 of his career. Ovechkin got his 500th goal in game number 801 of his career. So see, like, for Gretzky, it was goals, 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 and then drop off. But the other thing is, although Ovechkin's got 853 goals, I love this. He's got on his career 697 assists. All right. So
Gretzky has,
and this is why, yeah, he might break the record, but there's no comparison between the two. And it's kind of a joke. It's just Austin Matthews might end up breaking the record, but come on.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get 10 assists a season. Gretzky on his career had 894 goals and 1,963 assists, right?
Yeah.
he's got more assists in his career than any other player's gotten points.
Yep.
So, like, that's where the difference is in that situation. So
yeah, you'd have to average 150 points for like 20 years or something to break his record. They said that's insane.
It's just gross. I mean, Gretzky has, let me see here, 11 seasons in a row of over 100 assists. And then the season that he didn't get it, he had 90 assists. And the season prior to when he started that run, he had 86. So right there, yeah, it's almost 13 seasons in a row of over 100 assists. So
no, there's no
comparison, right? There's absolutely no comparison. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm not big on guys just hanging around to break a record. You know, the fact that Gretzky broke it in such a quick time is more impressive to me, but whatever. I mean, maybe Jagr will come back and go after it
too. He's the same age as me, so I don't know. But I think he played last year in the Czech league, so he's still going. He's still playing.
I believe he did. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. But yeah, when you look at those stats, it's just mind blowing to see those stats. Like, and then nobody even coming close to him on those assist numbers. It's just,
well, it's like they said, if you take away even Gretzky, all of his goals, he's still the top scorer of all time or something, which is insane.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's gonna tell you, like, we're not comparing apples to apples here.
let's just say it was a different time and different goalie equipment. Let's just say that.
it was yeah, but it's just amazing just when you look at those numbers. I mean,
oh yeah,
I mean, the next closest to him ever was Ron Francis, and he was still 700 assists below Gretzky. So,
yeah, exactly. You
know,
exactly.
Unbelievable. I know, wrestling fans, you are now just like, what the heck are we talking about here? But sorry, deal with this.
That's right.
it's what goes on. But okay, one last question I had for you. I forgot to ask you earlier. What'd you think of Backlash, and what'd you think of the fans at Backlash?
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I did not see it.
Oh, you didn't see it yet? Okay.
No, I have not seen it. So definitely, I haven't even looked at the results, to be honest. Usually, I don't have the WWE Network at home, but I usually tend to follow along with it. And just last night, I was more occupied with the hockey game, and I just kind of didn't really pay attention to it. I'm assuming there wasn't any title changes.
There was one. Yeah, but I won't spoil it on you.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, okay. Send me a DM when you go through and let me know your thoughts on the show. And,
okay, for sure.
And the fans, like, because it's a very contentious topic about how the fans were. So yeah.
Well, I saw them on Friday with the SmackDown doing the un, deux, trois. Yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah. <Like that. laughs> Yeah, for sure. All right, Steve. Well, that's great. I appreciate what you've done here joining me today. I'm glad that we could get a chance to talk hockey as well. So. One more time, let's let everybody know where they can find you so they can go support you.
Okay, well, my Twitter or X, whatever you call it, is at Steve J. Mackey, and the podcast is at Bruins Fastcast. It's available on Spotify and Spotify for Podcasters. And again, I'm not really sure where else. That's the ones I know for sure. But definitely, and it comes out every once a week. And please listen, rate, and subscribe if you can.
Yeah, let's support Steve, man. He's doing some great stuff over there. And if you got any questions about hockey or wrestling or anything, Steve's always open to answer anything on Twitter or whatever. Make sure you reach out to him and follow him on there. Get his follower count up and all that good stuff. And go enjoy some NHL playoffs, too. It's going to be some good stuff. Always, yeah. To me, still to this day, is the hardest. I think it's the hardest championship to win.
Yeah. Well, in basketball, they're not body checking each other and fighting. So there you go.
and it's the greatest 2-month period ever as a sports fan. Like, yeah. It's still to this day, like, just night after night of hockey, and just wars going on. Like, I miss the old Quebec, Nordique, Montreal line brawls that you used to get, but still, it's still some good stuff. We need some good Norris division battles.
That's like right. Norris. Boston and Hartford.
Boston and Hartford. Adams division wars. Boston, Hartford, and Quebec and Montreal. Yeah.
Yep. Well, you can still do those in the old Hockey 94 game, so that's good.
There you go. Blades of Steel. Let's get that going again.
That's right.
All right, Steve. Thanks very much. I appreciate you joining us today. And thank you to the listeners. Make sure you check us out every time that we show up on wherever you find your podcast. I'm going to have some more great guests coming up in the future. If you want to follow me on social media, you can go to X or Twitter or whatever the heck you want to call it. It's at WWTTpod. Also Wrestling with the Truth on Instagram. Facebook is Wrestling with the Truth. Also, don't forget to go over to YouTube and check out Wrestling with the 80s, which is my love affair with 80s wrestling. I have a YouTube channel over there. I know. I've been slacking. I haven't had videos out lately, but it's coming back. Don't worry. It's coming back. I just recently watched The Iron Claw with the wife, and I think we might do a review of that to get me back on the horse for recording videos again. And then I got a good idea for some stuff that I'm going to be looking at that might involve the year 1984. So we'll talk about that. But anyways, head over to YouTube, and it's Wrestling with the 80s. Or if you want to go on Twitter for that, it's at WWT80s or Wrestling with the 80s on Instagram. And finally, Wrestling with the 80s, we have a Facebook group. So if you're on Facebook, join the group. And we just talk old school 80s wrestling and 80s wrestlers. And we even have a couple 80s wrestlers. We have Abdul the Butcher. We have Missy Hyatt. So a couple of different people from that era as well. Other than that, I want to say thanks. One of our bigger supporters, that you can also find us on Sportswire Sports Radio with Tom Bryce and the crew over there. So a great network to check out, not just wrestling talk, but hockey talk, baseball talk, all kinds of sports on there, and a lot of independent wrestling as well. Tom is like the hardest working man in sports broadcasting. So check out Sportswire Sport Radio. And to everybody out there that supports this podcast and all our friends out there, you know who you are. Thanks for your help and assistance with this. Anyway, Steve, thank you once again. Take care, everybody. Catch us next time on Wrestling with the Truth.
Go Bees.